This is Karen Lyle of SalesPort Talk, and I'm speaking with Evan Swartz, who is the statewide director of the California Coastal Cleanup with the California Coastal Commission. Evan, tell us a little bit about the California Coastal Cleanup.
So this year, we're encouraging people to recognize that they can clean California's coast from their own front door. What we want people to do is come to the understanding that everything in California flows downhill to our coast, and that trash in our streets is actually ocean pollution that's just waiting to happen. So if we can clean up our neighborhoods, clean up our communities, clean up local parks and creeks before the rains come and wash all of that trash down into our stormwater system, we're actually cleaning our coast. So we want folks out in their neighborhoods as often as possible, picking up trash wherever they see it.
This is Karen Lyle of SalesPort Talk, and I'm speaking with Anna Kaufman with the San Francisco Surfrider Chapter. Anna, there's going to be something special happening in September. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the California Coastal Commission is known mostly for the California Cleanup Day in September, and because of COVID this year, they aren't able to have just one specific day. So they're spreading it out throughout the month of September and encouraging individuals and families and people in your pod to socially distance and safely do their own cleanups, either whether it be in their own neighborhoods or at their local river or shoreline or any place that you are, is to just go out and safely clean up, socially distance, of course, wear your mask, wear gloves, bring a picker, and then use the CleanSwell app to post what you've collected so that the entire month of September is used for collecting data that will be shared later in October.
This is Karen Lyle of SalesPort Talk, and I'm speaking with Robin Albritton, the Senior Manager of the International Coastal Cleanup for the Ocean Conservancy.
September is a very exciting month for Ocean Conservancy because historically it hosts the International Coastal Cleanup.
Now, I understand you have an app this year that people can download that can help them participate in the cleanup during the pandemic. What is that app and how do they get it?
So our app is called CleanSwell, and it's available in both the Google and the iPhone app stores. And the beauty of the CleanSwell app is that it can be used literally anywhere in the world. You don't even have to be on a coastline. I personally live in Atlanta, and I will be participating in the International Coastal Cleanup in my neighborhood. We're suggesting using the CleanSwell app as a great way for small household or family units to get out and do their part for their community and for their environment.
All right, thank you for that, Crisscross, familiar music. And, of course, Tuesday in the first hour means it's time to have our SalesPortTalk.com segment, unlike anything on nationally syndicated radio, as we dedicate time every Tuesday to the sport of sailing, both competitive and leisure. And my co-host for this segment, as always, is our own Karen Lyle. How are you, Karen?
I'm doing great, Rick. How are you doing?
Not too shabby. And we have a guest, speaking of the Bay Area. We have Adrian McCullough. He is the captain of the new tall ship Matthew Turner that was built in Sausalito. Adrian, welcome to the show. And when I think of shipbuilding and shipwrights, I don't usually think of posh Sausalito, but there's a lot of maritime business that goes on there, isn't there?
There really is. Sausalito is really the hub of maritime culture in the Bay Area, in my humble opinion. It's a working waterfront. There's a lot of heritage there that dates back to the turn of the century, right on to World War II, and right on till today, where we're, you know, still actively building ships. Yeah.
Adrian, I noticed that you have served on many tall ships, including the SB Irving Johnson, the SB Exie Johnson, which are down in Los Angeles. I'm actually a member of the LA Yacht Club, and that's Lamy, right?
That's right. Yeah. I started my career when I was 15 years old on a French training vessel. I did high school on board a ship and basically following the footsteps of Christopher Columbus and doing some archaeological and basically archaeological sailing trips through the Caribbean, and that's what sort of set me on my path. And being from Canada, you know, I sort of made my way through the Canadian ships, and then I progressed to working on boats down the west coast of the United States, which landed me for part of my journey with the Irving and X.C. Johnson in San Pedro, which also is a working waterfront of the west coast.
When we say tall ship, we're talking about just traditionally rigged vessels, but you can have schooners and clippers, and there's all sorts of kinds you can have. So how would you describe the Matthew Turner?
Yeah, indeed, that's an interesting question. So tall ship is sort of a term it's an umbrella term that I feel has been used loosely over the years to just sort of generally classify a certain kind of sailing vessel. Matthew Turner is tall. Her mainmast reaches from deck to the top of her truck, which is the tip top of the mast. Is 110 feet. So in my books, that's fairly tall. And she is a brigantine. So that means she otherwise would have been a schooner, except for her foremast has square sails. She has yards, she has a course, split topsails, and a t'gallant, making her a brigantine. And she was built historically, these kinds of vessels were built to sail through the trades to the South Pacific, carrying cargoes. So really good running downwind.
She's a beautiful ship. And I were you out with the Matthew Turner sometime in the last 3 weeks?
Yeah, so as a captain, I take the ship out. We are running trips Friday through Sunday with some other things sprinkled in between, doing mission-driven heritage sails around the bay, pointing out some of the sites and educating people on the ship herself, why we built her, what her mission is, and what makes ships like this so historically important to the history of the Bay Area shipbuilding. And so, yeah, I've been out every weekend. Last weekend, obviously, we had some smoke, so we were forced to cancel due to air quality. However, yeah, we get out as much as we can.
And it's interesting, too, when you go over all the different types. You talked about a brigantine, but like with a bark or a barkentine, and then you have to count the masts and then see if the mizzen is fore and aft. Are you an expert at just like instantly recognizing that right on sight?
Pretty much, yeah. I went to a wind boatbuilding school, and then I have done a lot of rigging in my life. I actually, when the Irving Johnson had an accident near about 6 months after she was built, I went down there as a rigger and assisted in re-rigging the Irving Johnson to get her seaworthy again. So I'm pretty good at picking out the various different styles and types of rigs, fully rigged ships right down to schooners and sloops. It's really just a configuration of the yards and the masts. And it's once you sort of, there's sort of a little handbook on that. It's not that technically challenging once you wrap your brain around it.
You also served on the Lady Washington and as a captain, and we have we love the Lady Washington. We've had her captain and on the show several times and followed the journey up to Aberdeen. Tell me just the name. I want the name of this particular part of the ship. So the webbing that is made of ropes and knots that you climb on to get up to the top of the mast or the deck that's up there. What is that called?
Those are the ratlins. So we have shrouds that stay the mast to keep them upright. And because we have square sails and yards, we are required to go aloft, as they say, to cast the gaskets and prepare the sails, essentially unfurling them and getting them ready to set. We have ratlins, which are basically the little ropes that are tied on to those shrouds that get us from deck into the rig. The Matthew Turner has rat boards, so we have boards. They're a little bit more stable. Matthew Turner ships use rat boards, and they're also better to get younger people into the rig as well. You don't have to be quite as careful. Well, you always have to be careful with your footing, but the boards just make it a little bit easier for sure footing. So there's a few different ways of getting up there.
A couple more questions for Adrian McCullough, Rick Tuttle, and Karen Lyle with you on SailSport.com on Tuttle Landing Sports. Adrian, the captain of the Matthew Turner, based in Sausalito. When you look at these tall ships and you think about, you know, the days of peril from cross-Atlantic crossings and exploration, what have you, I remember in the last decade there was a recreation of the Bounty, HMS Bounty, which was fully rigged. It ended up sinking in a hurricane. And then there was the Concordia, which I think Canada had, and that one in the last decade, that capsized and sank. So these aren't pleasure cruises. You got to keep your eye on the horizon, and it's a challenge, isn't it?
It really is a challenge. Most of us, when you get into the higher levels of operating these vessels, we have very specific training that allow us to, A, predict storms and forecast. We have weather, very sophisticated weather models, sophisticated navigation gear. The Matthew Turner has commercial-grade navigational equipment on board and satellite communications. And so we have all these tools that are for us to use in order to keep the ship and crew and passengers as safe as possible. Ships inherently have a risk in that they carry a lot of sail and they are manually operated, so there is an inherent risk involved in it, but we are in the business of reducing that risk as much as possible and at all cost in order to avoid such instances. Obviously, in the tall ship industry, there are going to be accidents. It's unfortunate. I've known people that have been on both of those vessels that you speak of, and it's very unfortunate. However, we are in the business of studying, learning from history and experiences, and trying to push forward and be safer through these tragedies. So, yeah.
Well, it does seem that there's a tradition of captains and crew basically talking to each other about what happens to learn from. You have had a lot of experience here on the Pacific Coast and especially in the Bay Area, and you've sailed in other parts of the world on tall ships. How would you compare the weather, sea swells, you know, tide currents, you know, just the general conditions that we have here, right going out the Golden Gate, to the other experiences that you've had? What are the differences between those?
Well, each little region has its own microclimate and weather patterns. San Francisco itself is challenging. On average, we have 270 days of fog, not full days, but moments of fog on average. So we have that. We have the super warm inland temperatures meeting the super cold ocean temperatures, and that creates a microfrontal system, which brings the winds up throughout the day. So you will notice from about June until the end of September, we have very fresh breezes in the afternoon. And that is essentially an effect of the cold and the warm air mixing. That's a challenge. And the other thing, the West Coast does not have a lot of harbors of safe refuge. So we must travel long distances in order to find harbors, sometimes days. When you turn left down the coast, you have a few small areas, Half Moon Bay, Redwood City, and then you're down to Monterey, and after that you're around Conception and heading yourself into the Channel Islands or San Pedro. So, you know, we travel vast distances in order to get into safe harbors. Once you're there, having sailed in Southern California, the conditions are much more mild. Less wind, sunnier, warmer. San Francisco, you know, every day can be different. You sort of have to pack for all seasons for a day of sailing on San Francisco Bay and up in the mid-coast area where we're located.
Last question for you, Adrian. I know that you also have programs for students and for ocean research. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So our mission is basically to provide equal access to the water through science-based educational programs. We want to foster a connection with the watersheds, ocean environments, nautical heritage, and establish ocean literacy. I believe that the oceans are, you know, in a very precarious position, environmentally speaking, and I think young people need to learn as much as they can about the ocean, and hopefully some of them will decide that they want to make it their life mission to help preserve the ocean environment. So that's what we do. We try to take real science experiments when we're on the water. We want to empower students of all ages and backgrounds to become environmental stewards and to help transform the world that we live in. So that's what we do. Our ship is a green technology. We're a hybrid. So we're basically two big diesel electrics. We burn biodiesel, and then we have these big battery banks that store up our energy. So when we sail through the water, our props act as turbines, and we're able to generate our own power. The ship was built out of eco-forested materials. All the wood came out of an eco-forest up in Mendocino. So we've done things sustainably as possible, and our programs are reflective of that sort of mission and philosophy.
Adrian McCullough, captain of the Matthew Turner, doing great work in Sausalito. Thank you for your time, Adrian. And Karen, thank you as always, and let's do it again next week.
We'll see you next
week. Thank you very
much. All right, thank good you. Stuff. I'm Rick Kuddle, and the lines are open, 1-800-878-PLAY. Come on back on Sports Byline.